This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
That's exactly what
everywhere
I was going to say.
Everywhere you go.
I know.
You know what? Charlie, we were sitting here just before going to air, and you said, do you know what? I think we're going to have a white Christmas.
Yep.
Yeah.
Weather's with us.
Absolutely. And you took a look at the charts for the next couple of weeks.
Yep. The charts. That's called the forecast, actually.
Yeah, the forecast.
Yeah, I've got an Excel spreadsheet that Santa Claus put together and sent to me, and it's all looking good.
Right there. My gosh.
No, above zero.
I love a white Christmas.
Me
too.
I do. Now I can actually get in the mood. I've got to get a tree this weekend and, you know, move on into the season.
Exactly. Okay.
By the way, this is Frank Proctor for anybody who is listening for the first time.
And that's Charlie Dobbin.
Exactly. On my right is Frank Proctor, and on my left is nobody.
You're right. Just the two of us in this studio. But across the way,
there's Sebastian with his smiling face.
Yes. And he's handling all the phone calls that you'll call in.
Of course. And you'll give everybody the number so even more people will call in.
That's a good idea, Charlie.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while, you come up with a good idea. Okay.
Thank you.
In Toronto, if you want to get a hold of Charlie, by the neck. Give her a call. 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, it is toll free 1-866-740-4740. The Garden Show, where we have a little mantra: call early, call often, one question per call. And you can always call back, you know, and get it on for the second time. That's happened before, hasn't it?
Yes, and you know what? I find people email and send about 20 questions in their emails just to get around that.
Yeah, little rascals. Okay. Oh, yeah, and if you're a first-time caller, let Sebastian know, because then when you're welcome to the air, that will precede your voice.
Wings.
Okay? Yeah.
Get garden your garden wings.
Well, anyway, you got stuff going on there?
I do.
Okay.
Did you want me to share it with you?
Well, that'd be a nice idea.
Okay, Evergreen Brickworks. Have you ever been there?
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, a long time ago. Holy cow.
It's better.
Pottery Road there.
Yeah, it's better all the time. Yeah, so it's the Bayview Extension Pottery Road. It's been a long process of taking the old abandoned brickworks, industrial air sort of installation there that was very much mothballed for a long, long time. And slowly it's been turning into a real community gathering place with all kinds of cool things. Well, of course, at this time of year, they launch what's called the Winter Village. And the Winter Village is opening today. There is something happening every day in the village up until Christmas. Grab your friends and family. Get ready to experience winter in a whole new way. You can eat, you can shop, and you can play today right through to December the 23rd, weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m., and weekends 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., free admission, of course. Mm-hmm. And something that's just, you know, to keep in mind, there is a free shuttle bus from Broadview Subway Station to, you know, back and forth to the Brickworks. I think it runs on the half hour. So, because there's not a lot of parking there, and on weekends, it's super busy.
Right.
And so they've always encouraged people to ride bikes and, you know, get there by whatever means. And that's where this shuttle, you know, is great, because it helps people get there, because it's certainly not a place you could easily walk to. It's down in the valley there. So for more information, go to evergreen.ca. They have a winter biking thing going on. So they've got bicycles with big fat tires.
Oh, that you can rent there?
Yeah, you can rent. Yeah. And you can go tootling about down in the valley. They've also got skating going on down there. So you can bring your own skates or rent skates on site.
Well, that's great. Good stuff. All right.
Yeah, pretty fun. I think I mentioned this, but keep in mind, tomorrow, the Ontario Rock Garden and Hardy Plant Society is meeting from 1 to 4 p.m. You're very welcome to join in with Sean James of Fern Ridge Landscaping, who will be presenting Growing Gracefully, Maturing a Landscape. that's kind of like you and me.
We grow old gracefully. Yes.
Exactly. We're maturing.
Oh, am I ever.
In our own little landscape here. It's at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, 777 Lawrence Avenue East at Leslie in the Floral Hall. Speaking of Toronto Botanical Gardens, they've just released their brand new program guide. It's the what's going on for winter and spring 2007. So January, February, and March.
I see right off the bat from the front, they include herbal cold and flu remedies.
Exactly. So there's presentations, there's courses going on. These are all offered to both the members of the TBG and the public. Mm-hmm. But keep in mind, members get a price break. So then my next thought was, why not consider giving the gardener in your life the gift of membership at the TBG?
Hey,
it's only
idea.
$45 a year, and you get so many benefits.
Wonderful gift.
Well, great gift, because obviously you're supporting the botanical gardens, but you get all these programming. There's free events. You get money off at a percentage off at the gift shop. I mean, it's just and it's a really
endless benefit.
Super, super worthy cause. So that just was something that flipped to my brain as well. If you got that gardener you're looking to buy for, torontobotanicalgarden.ca.
Nice plug. I love it. Hmm. It's coming up to 9:14, so we got to push along because we do have callers on the line, and several of them are first-time callers.
Nice.
So I'm going to get my bell ring arm
get
shape.
Get your arm loosened up.
We'll return here on The Garden Show as we check in with Charlie Dobbin on a Saturday.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, let's just go around the corner first time up.
Alrighty.
In Toronto, there's Dorothy on the line. Good morning, Dorothy. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Morning.
I got a very large chrysanthemum plant for Christmas.
A chrysanthemum or a poinsettia?
Poinsettia.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. And the thing is, other years, the leaves have fallen off.
Mm.
And I'm wondering how I can keep it this year.
Where have you got it in your house? Where is it sitting
Right by the fireplace.
Mm. And do you keep the fireplace going?
Oh, no.
Okay.
There's no fire around it.
Okay. No, the reason I ask is because one thing that poinsettias don't like is they don't like drafts. They don't want hot spots and they don't want cold spots. They want just, steady room temperature.
Yeah.
It's nice if they can be in a bright spot, so they don't need to be right in a window, but certainly in a bright room is nice.
Yes, and, that's where it is.
Okay. And then the next thing is every single day, once a day, make it part of your routine, after you've had your first cup of coffee or whatever in the morning. And go and feel the surface of the soil. If it's feeling quite springy and moist, there's no need to water. But at some point, the surface is going to dry out, and you're going to feel it's quite a bit drier on the surface. It'll still have a bit of spring, but it'll just be that dry sensation. When you feel that, it's time to water. And water with room temperature water. And, give it, if it's a good big plant, 6-inch or 8-inch pot, you're going to need to give it a good cup and a half, maybe 2 cups of water, just to give it a thorough watering, and then you're good to go. Every day, just keep feeling, and you might water once a week, you might water every 4 or 5 days. It just kind of depends what the temperature is and how big the pot is, etc.
Well, the foil that they put around the plant,
mm-hmm.
Does that cover the hole and
yes.
the bottom?
It does. And so that you do bring up a good point. And that is, though it's pretty, the poinsettias and any of the gift planters are pretty when they're all wrapped up like that, it's actually harder to take care of them with all the wrapping. So you certainly could take all that foil and frou-frou off the plant and just have it sit on a saucer or, so you need some kind of a tray below. Sometimes we'll just put it in a decorative ceramic pot cover, something that we can see when the water drains out the drainage holes, because that's what you want. You want to water thoroughly so it drains out the bottom, but then you don't want the plant to sit in a lot of water. So, be careful that the water gets absorbed up into the pot.
So if I keep the foil around the plant, it won't go through?
Yeah. Say that again. If you keep the foil, did you say?
Yes.
Well, it will go through, but it will sit in the foil, and you won't know. Like, you can't see that you've watered thoroughly enough because it's caught up.
Or could you just make a hole in the foil itself?
True. You can go from below with some scissors and cut some holes into the foil, and then, again, have that saucer below that. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
All right, Dorothy.
All right, Dorothy, thank you very much.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And on to our next caller. My golly, get my arm in shape here just a minute. Hey, Pauline in Scarborough, that's for you.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome, first-time caller.
Thank you very much.
You've got wings.
I have wings. Oh, yes.
Garden wings.
Yes.
First-time caller, garden wings. Welcome.
Okay. I have a strange situation with amaryllis. Mm-hmm. I had two bulbs, and one has already come up and flowered and is on the wane, and the other one is just looking very sad.
Mm. Are they new bulbs this year?
No, okay. No. One is 2 years old and the other was last year.
Okay. The sad one, if you feel the bulb, because it's in the pot, obviously, and some of the bulb is sticking up out of the soil. So if you feel the bulb, does it feel like hefty, it's got bulk there, or does it feel like just a lot of paper, on the outside and not a lot of bulb inside?
It feels healthy.
Okay.
When you squeeze it, it doesn't squeeze. It's solid.
Okay, good. Yeah. That's good. All right. So you've tried to wake them both up. You've brought them into the sun. You've given them some water. And one has responded and the other one is just still sitting there dormant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't panic yet. It is still, it's not Christmas yet. So maybe that amaryllis is waiting to actually bloom for Christmas. Because, once they get going, they go fast.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I know. Frank's going to tell us about his amaryllis in a minute.
Unbelievable.
But so what I would do is keep it where you've got, it should be a warm spot, sunny or bright spot. Be very, very careful to not overwater at this point. Mm. What I do is I water the amaryllis once when it's dormant, and I try not to water it again until it starts to grow. So it will respond eventually. It's just taking its time. It's on a work-to-rule program.
Well, the one that bloomed, you can't believe it was 3 feet high.
Yeah, amazing.
Just one stem.
Yeah. And now the leaves are coming out, obviously.
Well, no, it's done. It started to come out about a month ago, and I thought, that's strange. Mm-hmm. And it just kept growing and growing, like Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah. Well, that's the flower stalk. But after the flowers, typically we'll get leaves come up. You're allowing that to happen, of course.
After the stalk.
After
the
flower.
The stalk is still standing, but I'm waiting for it to fall over and dry up.
Right. So you can remove the dead flowers, leave the green stem, because that is photosynthesizing as we speak, and eventually it will shrivel up, and then, you're right, you'll just cut that away. But meanwhile, do water it because leaves need to come up. Leaves need to grow. You've got to let those leaves grow and fatten the bulb up for next year. Like, that's the process with the bulbs. They use a lot of energy to make those flowers, but that energy has to come from somewhere, and it comes from the leaves absorbing sunlight, turning sun energy into carbohydrate, which will grow the bulb up fatter and juicier for next year's flower.
There you go.
So you keep it growing as a houseplant right through until August. And if you want to put it out in the summer, that's fine, but it's got to grow with leaves for months and months.
Thanks, Pauline. And again, welcome to the show.
Exactly. Don't be a stranger. Did you want to just fill us in a bit on your amaryllis?
Oh, yes. The amaryllis that was given me through you from...
From flowerbulbsrus.com.
Yeah. The darn thing is growing like a weed. But honest to Pete, it's about 14, 15, 16 inches high. And you could almost watch it grow overnight.
I know. That's what I love about amaryllis.
Unbelievable.
They grow, once they get growing,
it
happens right before your eyes.
Well, I am so tickled that, me, the person with the black thumb.
I was
going to
say, you think you can kill artificial plants.
Wow.
But that everybody feels like a gardener. Like you, because you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
My daughter, I gave her one for Christmas, for her birthday.
Yep.
And, she's sending me like hourly photographs. Look at it now. Look at it now.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
And you're doing the same thing. I'm going, oh my God. God. Yeah, Everybody's sending me amaryllis photos.
I sent a picture to Charlie. I can't believe it. Look at this thing.
So excited.
Anyway, hey, it's 9:20, almost 9:25, and there's some folks out there. Well, Bob in Kitchener, first-time caller, waiting to get on the line. So we will get to you, Bob. I kid you not.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, just before we go to our next caller, I got to get those numbers on the air because we have a couple of free lines right now. 416-360-0740 in Toronto, and then anywhere in the province toll free, 1-866-740-4740. So if you've been trying past weeks trying to get through in line, now's a good time to call. Well, hey, that's for Bob in Kitchener. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Bob.
Christmas to you both.
Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so very much. The question that I have regards little pesky, I think they're called voles, V-O-L-S perhaps?
Oh, yeah.
V-O-L-E-S, yep.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. And they're just, they destroyed my, well, they didn't destroy my total lawn, but they did a damn good amount of damage to my front lawn last spring. Uh-huh. And I've noticed some tracking going underneath my deck in the back, so I think they found a resort there. And, boy, I'm just trying to figure out if there's any kind of a action that I could take that maybe prevents damage in the spring.
So moles and voles look very similar,
yes.
And they're small. They're like the size of a mouse, basically, but they have pointy little heads and noses as opposed to a mouse, which is much more blunt-faced.
Correct.
The
Correct.
Difference, though, is moles eat insects and voles are vegetarians. So they will do massive damage to lawns and
root
gardens,
systems,
typically by chewing the roots from below. So they'll make tunnels, and then they'll eat all these roots off, and then the poor little plant dies because it has no roots. So, yeah, they can be challenging. I guess if you're worried that they've moved in under your deck, mind you, I guess, yeah.
They moved under the deck. Amazing, though, there's no damage to my backyard. At this point, they just seem to be feeding, I guess, at the front. They left and my neighbor's lawn as well. They did a fair amount of tracking in the spring, and I'm just trying to think, oh, I've got to get away from this spring.
Right. So Frank's looking at me like he's had some experience.
Well, out at Shirley's place out in the Newmarket area, it's a farm, and the front lawn, basically, or the lawn, just inundated with moles or voles. I'm not sure which. Mm-hmm. But we tried to find out about this last year. Remember, there is a product where you insert it into the holes that you see, and it emits a sound,
sonic sound
that they do not like.
Supersonic sound.
Yeah. And I wish I could remember the name of the darn product, but if you go online.
I will.
And just look for that, and that's the basic premise, is you put something in there that sends out this signal, this sonic signal, that they hate, and they can get the hell away.
Okay.
So, wonderful news.
Okay, so now I remembered. Somebody did recommend that to us. So there is something out there, and it might be more mole-based than vole-based.
Okay. But if anybody knows, you know, call in, let us know.
Well, here's the other thing is, just a quick search here on the web. There is a website called getridofthings.com, and when you look up under voles, it shows you what they look like, shows you what the damage looks like, and best methods for vole control are things like habitat modifications, so trying to make your yard inhospitable so they won't move in, like clearing away brush and places where they might make nests, building fences, of course, to try and keep them out of the property. Make sure that you're fencing your trees because voles will chew the bark around the base of the trees, particularly just beneath the snow when there is snow, which will kill the trees because they'll girdle the trees. There are vole traps for trapping purposes. There's obviously vole poison, though I'd be very careful of that because you don't want to poison, animals that you don't want to poison. Getting rid of voles naturally includes using things like castor oil. Simply spray it where you want it, and the unpleasant taste and smell makes the voles run away. Of course, there's the hot pepper idea. Sometimes people don't like the idea of the hot peppers because they worry that the animal will get on their feet and then get it in their eyes and it's all horrible. But certainly smelling or tasting hot pepper, cayenne peppers, something that, you know.
They don't want to have any part of it.
They'll stay right away from owls. Keep, encouraging owls to be on the property because owls eat voles. And my other bottom line is a product that I have recommended in the past for repelling many pests from the garden is a product called Plant Skid. So it's one word, Plant SKYDD, so double D. And this was invented or created in, I believe, Finland, and it was all about elk. They were trying to protect vegetation from elk and it's completely organic, and it is obviously available on the web, and it is available through some garden centers. But it repels not only elk, but deer, rabbits, voles, chipmunks, squirrels, opossums, moose. The list goes on. So your kids are safe and effective to be used all over the place. So that's another one to check out.
Any of those suggestions might work for you, Bob?
Give one of them a try and maybe a few of them.
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Good luck. Let us know how that works out.
Thank you very much. And again, Merry Christmas to you both.
Thank you very kindly.
Nicely done. And if anybody does know that product that we're trying to come up with a proper name for, where it's a sonic sort of signal that sends out to tell the bulls to take off.
Google that for you.
Well, I'm sure we could find it somewhere along the way. And callers have indeed come in. Quickly, I'll note, let's see, we've got a line free. Okay, 416-360-0740 in Toronto and anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. And I believe it's Mary in Bolton who's next on the line. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Merry Christmas to both of you.
Thank you very much. You too.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm not sure if I heard. I only listened to 740, the Zoomer radio, so I thought it was you the other day that you were talking about watering your garden with urine.
With urine, yeah. That was that pee on your petunias, tinkle on the tomatoes.
Yeah. And I didn't. You said the second half would be the next day, but I didn't get a chance to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, like, what is the procedure? I know it's funny.
All right. So the idea is that urine, of course, is ammonia, very nitrogen-based, and nitrogen is a completely required nutrient by all plants. So the question is, why do we flush away all this urine and then go out and buy fertilizer, which is urea based. So
go out and tinkle on your tomatoes.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I guess that was just being silly, but yes, there are people and that definitely keep their urine on the property. Now you don't pee directly on the plants because it's too intense. You can certainly do damage to plants. It's more of the idea is peeing potentially in the soil that will be planted in the future or in the soil around plants. Of course, you don't do this if you're living in the urban or suburban world because the neighbors might call the police on you. I talked about storing urine, gathering it in a container, peeing into a pot, once a day, emptying it out, putting it into the composter. There's various ways that urine can be used. And really, think about it. You know what they do on the space station?
Oh, yeah.
They drink their urine.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, they don't drink it straight as urine. But my point is, there's water and there's ammonia in there. So it kind of makes you cringe when you think about it. But why are we throwing all this stuff away? It's like, it's there to be used. So that was what that was all about, just
okay,
in case
Mary.
You were wondering.
So you can save it in a container and any time, like summer, spring, fall, just put it in the soil.
That's right. Except I would empty that container every 24 hours. So because urine can really start to smell bad if it's
exactly.
Yeah. So you could certainly save it every 24 hours. You can pour it out into the garden, even in the wintertime. You could pour it into the composter or onto where the vegetables are going to be. Just be careful about putting it directly on plants in the middle of winter, because it's warm and the plants are asleep and you don't want to do sort of a partial waking up.
No, but this would be more for my garden.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay for like a vegetable garden,
right? Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
For sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
That's really great. I mean, I know now I know to store it. You can, and then just water the soil, not directly on the plant.
Exactly.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank
You're
you.
Very
all
welcome.
Righty.
Well,
she's running off to pee right now.
That's
I can just... Oh, Lord, you hear it all in the garden.
Well,
show,
I started
you?
It. It's my
well,
fault.
Well, you did, yes.
I take responsibility.
Mike in Smithville. Good morning and welcome to the show.
Smithville. Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank. Just further to that, I live out in a farm, and farmers out here take the sludge from the city's municipal plants and they put it on their fields.
I know.
And so there's an example of that it is reused. Just got to be careful that it doesn't have high in mineral contents from industrial sites, that's all.
Well, and also sewage sludge, depending on who created that sewage sludge. Like, you have to remember, we excrete toxins from our body. Also, if we're on medication, we're excreting excess medication into that sewage sludge. So as far as I know, the certified organic gardeners, to be certified, are not allowed to use sewage sludge because of the possibility of heavy metals and toxins in that sludge. But you're right, it is used and has been for the last 30, 40 years on gardens, you know, from human waste.
Right. Well, my question actually wasn't that. It was just a sideline because of your previous caller.
Yeah.
But as a little boy, I was born and raised in Hamilton, and the thing I loved to do in October, late September, was go pick up chestnuts underneath the chestnut tree.
Bonkers,
And that used to be a lot of fun. In fact, I even planted them and had a whole bunch of chestnut trees in the backyard.
Make pipes
out of them. I've noticed in the last 5 to 10 years that about July, the leaves start turning, and by September, they are all brown, like they're totally attacked by a virus or a fungus or something. I've never seen them like that before. It's only happened, like I said, the last 5 or 10 years. It seems to be throughout Ontario, wherever I drive, these beautiful, gorgeous chestnut trees, and they're all brown, and it's August. Do you know what's causing it? And is there anything I could do? I hate to see them go the way of the ash trees or the elm trees. But it doesn't look good, and everywhere I go, the leaves are totally changing by the early summer, and by late summer, the tree looks dead.
Okay, so, but I think this has been happening your entire life. You just didn't notice it.
Oh, really?
Because it's a syndrome that happens to chestnut trees. It's called scorch. And it has been happening ever since chestnuts were being planted. But you're right. Some years are worse than others. The leaves start to get all on the edges. They get all brown and crispy. And then that brown crispiness creeps into the center of the leaf, you know, turning yellow, turning brown, and they defoliate early. Now, some summers, like this one would be a good example, with the extreme drought, would have been stressful on all the trees. So we would have seen, you know, the scorch perhaps even worse this year, or earlier defoliation in the chestnuts this
it's
year.
Just that I remember as a young boy that I would look up and I would see the chestnut cracking and falling off the tree every time the wind hits it. And I remember those leaves being beautifully green. And I've never seen anything like it now. It's like they're being attacked. It seems like all our different varieties of trees now are being attacked by something and are in peril and we're losing so much. But it just seems that something that as a child I really enjoyed and had a lot of fond memories seems to be next in line.
Well, the other thing is the air pollution. some trees are better able to withstand the urban pollution, all that carbon monoxide that cars are putting out, et cetera, you know, the dusts and things. So some trees are better than others. And chestnuts, as I recall, are considered not well suited for the urban environment. They do not cope well with all the pollution.
Well, that's strange because, like I said, I was born and raised in Hamilton.
In Hamilton,
I even worked at Stelco during the summer when I was going to university. And the trees were great. Stelco's closed down now. The environment in Hamilton is the best it's ever been, and it's by default because the people who are polluting it and causing Randall's Reef and everything else don't exist anymore.
That's
so
true.
You would think they'd be better.
That's true.
Yeah.
And you know, speaking of which, you know, here in Toronto, our air has gotten way better in the summer from what it used to be because of the shutting down of the coal-fired generation. So you're right. Okay, so I'll leave this with me. I haven't looked it up in a long time, but I certainly learned about scorch way back at university because it was very consistently would happen to, there it is right there, horse chestnut leaf scorch. So Cornell University has a big agriculture college. It says occasionally and without satisfactory explanation, the margins of horse chestnut leaves turn brown and curl up during midsummer. For a long time, we blamed the symptoms on de-icing salt and even featured them prominently on a de-icing salt injury extension bulletin out of Cornell. Compacted soils and unfavorable weather conditions, either very hot and dry or very wet, seem to increase the severity of leaf scorch. But despite our best efforts, we just saw too many inconsistencies in scorch incidents. So We saw, anyway, I'll see if I can report back any updates. It looks like it's the jury's out a bit on what's going on with the scorch question and what can be done to try and avoid it.
Yeah, it just seems like you said, if it's cyclic, I was hoping that they'd start to turn around, but I have not seen, I've only seen it getting worse. I haven't seen the cycle turn the other way yet.
All right.
Hey, thanks
Leave
for bringing
it with
up,
me.
Mike.
I'll do some homework.
Really an interesting subject.
Yeah,
great question, yeah. Coming up to 9:43, so we do have to take a little bit of a break here and come right back, and we'll say hi to Pat and Grafton when we return here. The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, as promised, let's go to the line and say hi to Pat in Grafton. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Good morning.
Morning.
And Merry Christmas and Happy New
Year
to both of you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I don't really have a problem. I just wanted to comment on a strange phenomena in my garden.
Oh, what's that?
Okay.
I have Dusty Miller that have come back two seasons in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, as I look out the window at
them, still standing up.
They're as fresh and nice they were in July.
No kidding.
Cool. I've definitely had Dusty Miller survive, the roots survive the winter, and it comes up. It's like, we could consider it a tender perennial in that sense, that in the right place with snow to help protect it for the winter, the root can survive and it can certainly come back the following year. So that's great. You've obviously got a very hardy example, and you might want to just hold on to that and maybe take some cuttings, and before you know it, you can name it your very own.
Well, I have about six of them. I have three at the back and three at the front.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones at the front really get whipped by the north wind,
but
they
still
don't
survive.
Seem to care.
Yeah. So it's genetics, right? Typically, Dusty Miller will die, but you've obviously got a super hardy one there.
Gee, Pat, is there any chance you might take a picture of that and send it to us?
Sure, I can do that.
That's great. Okay, let me give you Charlie's email address, and you can take a shot with your iPhone or whatever there. It's c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. Okay?
Yeah, that's great. So,
yeah, we look forward to seeing
you. You never know. Dusty Miller Patteri.
How about that? Son of a gun. Hey, Mary in Kitchener, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Well, hello, Charlie and Frank.
Good morning.
I have a problem with my bamboo plant.
Mm-hmm.
I got it for Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a glass jar, vase, that's about 12 inches tall, filled with sand.
Mm-hmm.
And I water about a little bit every 2 weeks, but I notice the water sits on the top, and it doesn't penetrate into the sand.
Oh, that's odd.
So possibly, I think, it's still full of water. But right now I have there's five stalks in it, and the short one has turned yellow-orange on me.
Mm-hmm. So if it's completely yellow-orange, one of them, what I would do is I would pull it out. And in the process of pulling it out, you're going to see what's going on with that sand. Because they are designed, those are actually cuttings of Dracaena, but they're referred to as bamboo. And they are, those roots that they've grown are designed to grow in water. So you basically treat them like a cut flower almost. It's a vase full of water.
Yes.
Sometimes there will be like pebbles in the bottom or, you know, marbles, in your case, some sand. Is it like a colored sand thing or is it just like
it's brown and a pale yellow.
And it's probably all beautifully in layers.
Yes, it is.
So
yes.
If you pull something out, it's going to mess up your design.
Yeah. And I can't see if there's water in there or not. I can't tell.
So
maybe
but
I'm overwatering it. Is that possible?
I doubt it. What I would do is when you water, I mean, what you always want to have the water level above the sand. So you just constantly want to have water in there. So you really can't overwater. If anything, maybe that's why it's suffering a bit, is there's not enough water, because it's not like a regular pot with potting soil and drainage, et cetera. It's an actual glass vase where water should be in it at all times, and the sand should be covered in water. So you should see the water level above the sand. It also doesn't need to be in direct sunlight, but the plants are best in a bright spot wherever they are in whatever room they're in. So if it's a north window, they should be fairly close to the window. If it's a south-facing room, then they can be, you know, 10, 15 feet away from the window, but they do need a bright spot. All right?
In the window, away from it.
Yeah, just bright. Just, you know, lots of bright indirect light is what they do best at.
Yeah.
All right? Let us know how that works.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mary. Are you getting a bit of an echo here? Huh? No?
No.
I am.
I am.
I don't know what happened there. In any case.
You are your own echo, baby.
We're going to be in just moments talking to Bridget in Port Dover. And
that's Bridget in Port Dover.
Yeah, and
Bridget
Ronnie.
In Port Dover.
Would you stop?
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And the sous chef of the garden, Frank Proctor, saying good morning to Bridget in Port Dover. Hi.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year,
too. Thank you.
I have a bougainvillea that is approximately 8 feet tall.
Nice.
Should I bring it in... in the winter, obviously.
Yes.
It's not outside in the snow. it did very well for the first sort of couple of months or so, but it's currently looking rather sad.
Mm.
I think I really need to know when to prune it. I mean, would now be a good time? I've got some, or it may be to light. I've got it in a sunny window, but
good.
Sort of to one side.
So okay, so the more sun, the better.
Yeah.
So that's great. You've got a sunny window, but, you know, of course, you don't want drafts, hot air drafts, cold air drafts. So, you know, you've got to vent and deflect if there's vents near the windows. So that's important. Yes, you're going to need to prune because a plant that size coming in with all those leaves that grew outside and all that sun coming into your home, no matter how much sun is coming through the window, it's still less than what was outside.
Yeah.
So the UV levels have dropped. The leaves are responding to that.
Okay.
They are dropping with the intention of growing new ones, which will be far better prepared to absorb the sunlight that's coming through the window.
Right.
It's just totally natural. So at this point, pruning, I mean, you are going to need to prune, and you should plan a fairly hard pruning, removing at least a third of the plant.
Right.
By late February, early March.
Okay.
However, to do that kind of hard pruning now would be quite hard on the plant. So for now, I would remove anything that is starting to look like the tips have died, or there's the plant is just, you know, clearly struggling on certain branches or stems. Do that kind of keeping it clean, picking up the leaves as they drop. Water thoroughly when you do water, but let it get quite dry in between waterings.
Right.
So you might only water every 2 weeks or so, depending on temperatures, and no fertilizer for now.
Okay.
Come February, early March, absolutely crank out the fertilizer, do that hard pruning, and then the fertilizer will encourage new growth, and you'll be back in business with a, you know, fat, bushy plant for the spring.
And what fertilizer do you recommend?
I would go with an all-purpose flowering plant fertilizer. So it could be like a 15, 30, 15 type numbers. Or you could go with a traditional, you know, Blooms Plus, Miracle-Gro kind of configuration, which, again, will encourage new growth and, of course, ultimately some flowers.
Okay, Bridget.
Thanks, Bridget.
Thank you for the call.
I love Port Dover.
Yeah, it's a great spot on Lake Erie there. Yeah. You betcha. I'm glad we got to Ronnie, first time caller. Hey, Ronnie.
Hey,
welcome
good morning.
To the show.
Good morning.
Hi.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. You too.
All the best. I have a question for you. I have a money tree that's about 2.5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's been doing great. And lately, the leaves are turning yellow and then a light brown and then falling off.
And it's the leaves, the older leaves that are doing that. That's not the ones on the tips.
No, and there is some new growth at the tip.
Yeah. So you know what that is? That is, the plants are pretty smart. They know, even though they're inside the house, it might never have even been outside your house, but they know that the days have been getting shorter and they respond. And plants can never keep all their leaves all the time. They have to drop some of the leaves in order to, you know, just it refreshes the plant. The leaves get old. Sometimes it can even just be dirt and build up, dust build up on the leaves contributes to their demise. So the trick with the money tree is keep it similar to the bougainvillea we were just saying, watering thoroughly when it's time to water, but letting it really get quite dry between waterings. Keep picking up those leaves. Don't let them rot on the surface. Right. You will consider doing some trimming in the spring just to help the plant, you know, be a good shape. Turning it in the window every, you know, 180 degrees every week or so, keeping it as balanced. In a perfect world, both your plant and our last caller's bougainvillea would very much love to sit on a pebble tray. So that's like a cookie sheet kind of tray, big tray, full of gravel. Pot sits on top of the gravel, and you always keep water in the gravel. So the plant is sitting up on gravel, but water is constantly evaporating around the plant, helping increase the humidity. So higher humidity helps hold on to leaves as well. These are tropical plants that do prefer a more humid air than what we typically have in the winter. All righty. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Hey, guess what I just saw go by the window?
What was that?
I just saw a huge soccer ball on the back of a... Yeah, I should have punched you to look out the window. It was a tractor trailer. This massive soccer ball just went by on
FC,
a Christmas tree.
Man, they are
covered
in for a great night tonight.
BMO, yes. So go TFC because absolutely that's 8 o'clock tonight.
You got it.
And I have to do a quick shout out.
Yes.
We are meeting my special friend James Gray of James Gray Landscaping for breakfast. And I'm hoping his wife Jane will be attending breakfast as well. Good buddies. And she's a graphic designer. He's a landscape contractor who often works with me on projects. Lives close by in Etobicoke. So he's, you know, a Toronto-based boy and a lot of fun. You've never met him, so you're going to get to meet
good.
Him
I look forward to that.
In an hour
a
or
quick
so.
Little shout out I can do to all the gals in Shirley's exercise class.
Oh, yay.
They have a little annual get-together at the farm there, and they're on their way out there right about now.
Oh, Christmas tree. Shirley. She's just a Christmas angel.
Oh, my Lord. You got it.
She decorates everything. She's probably even got, like, decorated toilet paper in the bathroom.
Do you know something?
I bet she does. She's just right over the top with Christmas. I love it. So thank you, Sebastian. Couldn't do it without your smiling help. And thank you to all of our great callers from all over Ontario.
I know.
Yeah, way to go. And remember, we are here next Saturday and the following Saturday. So keep those questions coming and, you know, keep thinking gardening.
And Merry Christmas in advance.
And Happy Hanukkah. It's coming too.
You got it.
See you next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.